What I'd like to discuss with you today is the statement of Rava in Masechta Avodah Zarah Yutes Amud Beis, and you'll find this on page 156. So if you look for page 156, you'll see it's the second paragraph. And I want to call your attention to a question on this particular Gemara that we would like to raise and connect it to Parshas Bechukosai, which is our topic for today. The Gemara quotes an entire string of statements of Rava and enumerates various methods recommended by Rava, the Amora Rava, as to how one can achieve Torah study and success in Torah study. And for us, especially as we approach Chag HaShavuos, this is a very important question. Where should we be putting the emphasis? You know, today it's very popular. They publish these pamphlets called How To. You know, how to do this and how to do that. How do I succeed in Torah learning? What should be my goal? What's my responsibility? What does Hashem want from me? So Rava speaks about, for example, in that same sugya, Ein Adam Lomed Ela Mashal Libo Chofetz. You know, a person should choose a topic that he enjoys learning. You know, I remember I was teaching Masechta Brachos here in the Amic Learning Center. And I asked the Chevra if they wanted to learn the laws of Tzoah. You know what I mean by Tzoah? You know, there's certain places where you're not allowed to daven, and the Gemara goes into great detail about urine and feces and so forth and so on. So I got a little bit of a funny face from some of the guys in the class, and they said, Rebbe, you know, that's not exactly pleasant for us, you know. So if there's any way we could sort of de-emphasize that learning. So even though I gave them all Musash moves about how Torah is going great because it relates to even the most base aspects and dimensions of human biological reality, but nevertheless, you know, Ein Adam Lomed Ela Mashal Libo Chofetz. So I understand that, you know, the Rebbeim very often would try to sense, you know, what the Talmidim would enjoy learning, and they would gear themselves appropriately. If they felt that the students wanted to learn a certain Masechta, they would try to see if they could bend the curriculum and change the original skin, the original program, in order to make it appropriate for their needs. Then Rava goes on to give another bunch of statements about Torah. I don't have a Gemara Avodah Zarah here, so I'm just quoting from memory. But he talks about how you should try first to understand the text and then go on and look for deeper meanings. He gives a whole long list of recommendations. And then he says something that's pretty amazing. He says the following, Li'olam Ligras Inish, even after all my recommendations, a person should nevertheless study Torah. Ligros means garsinon, is to learn Torah. The afal gav de mishkach, miloshen shachach. You have an individual who admits to you, Rabbi, there's no way I can be tested on what I study. That's what the Gemara says, that in Masechta Brachos on Daf Vav, we studied it here. The Gemara says that the schar igra, the schar that people, the Gemara says, igra di yarcha is tircha. They used to have a yarchi kala, you know, where people would come to hear the Torah of the Rebbe, and it was very crowded. And they used to push them into a room, and it was uncomfortable. So the Gemara says that the schar, the reward that you'll get for coming, for participating in this wonderful yachikala, is the fact that you feel uncomfortable. I don't know if there's such an English word, I'll make it up if there isn't. Discomfiture. Is there such a word in the dictionary? Okay. For the discomfiture of sitting through a class when it's very crowded, that's going to be your claim to merit. So Rashi points out, why are they only getting schar for the feeling of crowded, you know, for being uncomfortable? So Rashi says, because if you ask them, in Yiddish we say, Kenst du iberzog in the shir? Can you say over the shir? So they start fumbling and mumbling. Then you ask them, what did the Rebbe talk about? Like, what was the topic of the shir? Even that they can't remember. I remember I was testing a young man for our yeshiva. I used to be Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva called Mevaseret. I don't know if you heard of it. It's right here, about 10 minutes out of Yerushalayim. So we used to go around to the various high schools to test the students. So in one case, I asked a young man, I'm not going to mention the school that he went to, I asked him, what studies do you have in your, he was a senior, you know, that's the last year. So he starts telling me about, he's taking an advanced course in literature, you know, he's studying Dostoevsky. I was very impressed. And then he told me, I'm taking a course in mathematics that's going to prepare me for university. I'm applying to the Ivy League colleges, you know, to Harvard and Yale and everything. But, so I said to him, I'm sorry, Ruvain, just making up a name, but what I meant to ask you is, what are you studying in Lashon Kodesh? Oh, Rabbi, sure, we have a class every week in Zionism. That was the extent of his studies in Lashon Kodesh. In another occasion, I tested a boy, and I asked him if we could learn a piece of Gemara. He's learning Gemara, very sophisticated, right? He's learning Gemara. So I asked him if we could learn a piece of Gemara today. He says, yes, Rabbi, I'll have to get my Gemara. I left it in my locker. So I said to him, and what Gemara are you learning? That I don't remember, Rabbi. But as soon as I bring my Gemara from the locker, I will remember. So what would you say about a student, if you had a student in your class, he doesn't remember what he learns, he hardly remembers the name of the Mesech. So Rava says, name, Li'olam Yigras Inish Afal Gavdim Mishkach. And in order to drive his point home, Rava even goes further than that. He says, V'afal Gavdilo Yada Maika Omar. And he quotes a pasuk to prove that even though he doesn't really understand what he's learning, lo yada maika amar, nevertheless he should be learning. So the question I want to raise with you is, you know, Rava was no slouch. You know, Rava was from the Gdolei Hamoraim. In certain sense, some people hold he was the number one. So we have to take his words very seriously. And in a certain sense, you know, I would say that the words of Rav are somewhat consoling. It's a nechama to know that even if I won't remember what I learned, for example, I don't know how many people in this room study Daf Yomi, or are bold enough to admit it. No, just me. I guess I'm the only one here. Oh, there are some. I see. Now, if you were to test me, after I learned the Daf, I would probably get anywhere between a 50 and a 60. If you test me one day later, I would get somewhere between a 0 and a 30. On a good day, I might get a 30. So, like, who are you fooling? Like, what's the point? Says Rava, no. Li'olam ligros inshi. You should be studying it even though you won't remember it, even though you really don't know what you're batting about, you know.
What does ligros mean?
Ligros means to learn, to study. Garcino, right? That's a key word in Shas, is garcino. Like, garis, the girsa. We speak about what we learned as children. That's called girsa de yankisa, you know, what you learned as a child. So it's a bit of a nechama. You know, for people who study and study, in the yeshiva world, for example, you can study an entire year with a Rebbe and cover 15 blot gemara for the whole year. 20 blot if you're lucky. Which is fine, you do it be'iyu and you go into great depth, and you have chakiris, and you investigate, and so on, but ask that fellow, after a year of learning, if he remembers what he covered on Daf Beis, blanks out. Complete blank out. In the best case scenario, you give him a Gemara and he looks it over. Oh, he reminds himself. So he's a little bit oriented. So Rabosai, so what's the point of this exercise? Rava is encouraging us, he's recommending and advocating someone to study Torah despite. Why? What's it all about? I want to go a step further. If I were to ask you, I'm going to give you two categories of individuals who study Torah, and tell me which of the two, and it's almost the answer is obvious, which of the two categories are more profound, have a more powerful impact. Category number one is called Tashbar. Tashbar is abbreviations for Tinoko Shel Beis Rabba. Young children, I don't know if you've ever passed by a cheder where they learn by rote and they repeat what they learn over and over again. Young children. The other possibility is, imagine the case of the great Rosh Hashiva or the great scholar, you know, Rav Simcha Medvinsk, you know, he goes into details and he elaborates and he really digs down into the bottom, and what emerges is something from the depths. He plummets the depths of Torah study. So obviously, in those choices, A or B, which is the more profound, and where would you anticipate could have a greater impact in terms of Torah study?
The second.
And yet, the Gemara says the following: Hakol mevatlim lebinyan beis habechira. When it's time to build the beis habechira, the beis hamikdash, which is one of the Tariq mitzvahs, then we have to discontinue, if necessary, our Torah study in order to rank and file, to help out, to lend a shoulder to build the Beis HaMikdash. Chutz, with one exception. What does it say? Not the Gadol Hador, right? Not the one who's paskening Shilas. Chutz mitinoko shel Beis Rav. Tashbar. And it's very strange. I mean, after all, the whole purpose of Torah study is in order to implement the mitzvahs, right? Gadol HaTalmud Shemeiv Lidei Maaseh. And here we're trying to train and educate our Tinoko Shel Beis Ravon, and then we tell them something which is almost antithetical when it comes to Binyan Beis HaMikdash, one of the most important, if not the most important of all mitzvahs. You go on and yell out and scream out whatever you're learning with your Rebbe. And the funny thing is that if you talk about the impact of Tinoko Shel Beis Ravon, you would think that it's very limited. And yet the Gemara goes on to say that Ein Ha'olam Miskayim, the world itself only exists mihevel p'em shel Tashbar. Hevel, it doesn't even say from it. It doesn't say mihavanasam, miyediyasam, mikriyasam. All that is, but what? Hevel p'em, it's just the air that they speak that keeps the world going. And all this seems to be so antithetical to what we understand and how we define the mitzvah of Torah study. After all, Ein Am Aretz Chassid. You know, very nice that you're learning and you're studying, but you don't understand and you don't know. So you're still beginner Am Aretz. So Rabotai, all that I've asked you until now, if you've been following me, Doc, have you been following me a little bit? Yeah? Because you look a little... You know, it's Sunday, especially for me. You know, I came back from Carmiel. I'm telling you, we got home at Tahar Nof at about 2 in the morning. I woke up a few hours later. I did what I had to take care of. And then I went out to return a rented car. It took me 45 minutes in the hot sun to return a rented car. Even in South Africa, when I rented a car, it didn't take me that long. Just kidding, a joke with you. No, but seriously, you know, I'm spoiled. You know, I'm not used to this whole thing. So we have to push ourselves a little bit. I know it's Yom Rishon, but we'll try to do the best we can. All that I gave you until now is just an introduction to what I want to talk to you about today. And that is the first pasuk in Parshas Bechukos. Because I honestly believe that first pasuk holds the key to understand what Torah study is all about. In b'chokosai teilechu, look at the first Rashi, we all know it by heart, but it's always good to see it inside. The im mitzvosai tishmoru vasisem osam. If you're dedicated to Torah, to mitzvos, to fulfill the will of God, then the Torah goes on to present an enumerated list of all the wonderful things that are going to happen. The rains are going to fall from the heavens. The land is going to produce its grains, its produce, its fruits. V'nasat haaretz es piria. All this schar, all this reward. For what? So we think this is for the fulfillment of God's chukos. Now, what does it mean to go in the ways of God's chukos? What do we mean by chukos? Can you give me another word for chukos? A substitute word. Chukah means a command, but what does it mean in our language? Jeremy, I haven't seen you in a while, so I got to get you into things, yeah? What do we call God's commands in our language, you know, here in the yeshiva? You know, mitzvot, right? So Rashi really presents what you and I would have thought intuitively was the straightforward understanding of this word, bechukosai. And Rashi says, Yochol zekiyum ha-mitzvah. So I might think that when the Torah says b'chukosei teilechu, it means to fulfill the mitzvos. That it can't be, says Rashi, by process of elimination. Kishu omer, the next part of the pasuk says, v'es mitzvosai tishmoru, and you will fulfill my mitzvos. By the very fact, by virtue of the fact that the Torah adds another category, you will fulfill the mitzvahs, then what do I know?
You studied it.
No, that imbukukosai telechu could not possibly be what? Fulfilling of the mitzvahs. Because otherwise the Torah would be repeating itself. And apparently there are three categories. There's imbukukosai telechu, there's vs mitzvosai tishmoru, you should put a comma in between each phrase, viasisam osam. So what is the difference now between imbukukosai telechu and im ves mitzvosai tishmoru? Rashi says, "Kshu omer v'yes mitzvosu tishmar rekiyum mitzus omer ha ma ani mekayim im b'chukosei teilechu." How then can I fulfill? And how do I interpret the meaning of the opening line in this week's parasha, "Im b'chukosei teilechu"? And he has the very famous three-word Rashi. You all know this: "Shetiyu amelim b'tor." Amelim means to what? What's amelus? To toil, hard work, to sweat it out. Sheyu amelim b'torah. Well, wait a minute. I have two questions that I want to ask, and you may see them on this page, which I photocopied for you, from a sefer here. It's a very hard sefer to get a hold of. It's called Hema Yenachamuni. I don't think, from what my research, they sell it in the bookstores. It was done as a kind of photo offset when somebody took notes at the shir of the Tolna Rebbe of Yitzchok Menachem Weinberg. He gave a weekly shir in his sister's house after his sister passed away. His sister, during her lifetime, used to host the Rebbe, her brother, weekly in her house for a shir. And it was a tremendous mesiras nefesh on her part. Her name was Chava. She, you know, she had many children, but somehow she was able to quiet down the troops and host this shir. And then she got very sick, and unfortunately, tragically, she passed away. So the Tolna Rebbe, for about a period of 2 years, dedicated the shir to continue going in her house, in her memory. And somebody took notes. And based on those notes, they were able to put together this very small, humble pamphlet. But I'm telling you, there are treasures here. Again, you have to dig a little bit, but I find them. And I hope anyone finds them, not just me. And what the Rebbe is bothered by is, what is this Amelus Bitorah? How is it indicated in the pasuk? No, you're right. You can't say that in b'chukosei teilechu means kiyum mitzvahs, because that's the next phrase in mitzvosei tishmoru. So that's mitzvosei tishmoru. So what is in b'chukosei teilechu? But whatever your answer to that question is going to be, it should be somehow reflected. It should be related to what? To the pasuk itself, to the words of the pasuk. Chuka means a statute. Teilechu means to follow. You have to follow the statutes of Hashem. Which means that, just like, if I can make a comparison, analogy, you know, there are certain laws that we have in the state of Israel, or in any state, right? So let's say, for example, I'm at a red light. I have to stop my car for a red... What do you call it in England? A robot?
No.
No? What do they call it?
Yeah.
A traffic light? So in what country they call it a robot?
South Africa.
In South Africa. Okay. In South Africa they call it a robot. I mean, the first time I heard that, I was very curious about it. So you're at a robot, right? And now it's 2 a.m. in the morning, Maisa Shahaya B last night, and there's no one around within a radius of miles. So what would you say?
Yeah, I still have to stop.
Why, Harvey? Who cares? What difference does it make? Does anybody lose anything? Do I endanger anyone's life by traveling through the red light? But the answer is, this is law. You know, there are certain laws that the government legislates, and they
expect them to.
Do you agree with me, George? You also agree with me. Okay, there are those who disagree with me. Like, for example, when I got to the next robot, there was a guy behind me. I don't know where he came out of. He didn't uphold the law. He went straight through the robot. And I said to my wife, I feel a little dumb. You know, I'm sitting here waiting for this thing to turn green, and he's... But there's law. Correct, there are laws. You're standing at a corner and the light hasn't turned red. You want to cross the street to the other side. You wait till the light turns. Don't tell me there's no one around. And how much more so in the case of cell phones. You know, today, the whole business with cell phones for drivers is so dangerous. You know, people are calling on cell phones and dialing if they don't have a hands-free, or they're texting. And, you know, they say, I'm above the law, Kilo. They don't exactly say it that way.
I bought the road.
It's my road. I own it, you know. I paid my taxes. And so there's something called chok. But again, the question that we're asking is, in b'chukosai teilechu, if I'm obligated to uphold the chok, what in the world does that have to do with amelus b'torah? And I'll tell you, there's a much more fundamental question that I want to ask. Forget about Amelus B'Torah. I have a Jew here in front of me who is an absolute genius. He's the most brilliant, you know, he's got an IQ, I don't know of what. He's been studying Torah since he was weaned from his mother's milk. And he doesn't need Amelus B'Torah. He just comes to the sugya and he reads it and he understands it. He goes through Rashi and Tosus. He can say a daf yomi shir, and it goes like the snapping thing. That's what we call yediyas haTorah. What's the purpose of Torah? As we said before, ein amor etz chassid. You don't want to be an ignoramus. You have to know the Torah. You can't fulfill the Torah if you don't know the Torah. So he knows the Torah. He does a chick chak, as the Israelis would say. It just in a split second, he understands right away. So fine, he's achieved and possessed Torah knowledge. Finito. Why bother him with the concept of Amelus B'Torah? He doesn't need Amelus B'Torah. To him it comes easy. As we say, do me something. For me it's easy. No. Shetiru Amelus B'Torah. And my next question is that even if I grant you, even if I allow your premise, I accept your premise that Amelus B'Torah is up there. You know, that's what we have to focus on. It's the first pasuk in Parshas B'Chukosai, which is going to introduce the brachos and the klos, right? Obviously, if it's up front, it's got to be important. There must be a significant message. Okay, I'll rack my brain, somehow figure out. I'll have to put in a great deal of effort, but I'll figure out why Amelus is so important. But then, the Torah should go ahead and tell me about the schar, about the reward. If this is what has to be emphasized, and you want to induce me or bring me in, so you want to promise me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu with his divine promises, wants to guarantee me a tremendous qualitative schar, which schar do you think the Torah should have, just intuitively, what would you say? Michael, what would you say? If I were the divine being, so to speak, and you're my servant, and I want to bring you in, and I want to promise you the world, which world should I promise you? Olam Haba. The Gemara tells us that the schar of Olam Haba is something Ayin Lo Rasa Zulasi Hashem, no human eye could even comprehend what the schar is in Olam Haba. The Gemara says, Yafa Sha'achas bi Olam Haba mikol chai Olam Hazeh. There's no way of comparison. You can't even. It would be comparing two things that come from different worlds, different beings, different essences. So if the Torah would have gone ahead and told me, you know, Imbukukosai Telechu Shetiru Amelam Torah, and if you do this, you fulfill this, you'll get schar. The Torah should have heaped upon me a little bit of the schar of Olam Haba. Instead, what does it say? The ground is going to produce its produce, and the rains are going to fall from heaven, and everything is wonderful. If you have the Chumash here, let me read to you a few of the psukim, and you'll tell me whether anything in this whole list of schar has any vague reminiscence of Olam Haba. V'nasati gishmechem bi'itam, v'nasnaretz yivula, v'yitzas sodi yitain pirio, v'yisem lechem dayish es botir, botir yasig es zora. Wonderful. Hishpati chaya robin oretz. You know, you'll be able to go to what they call a game park, or a Kruger Park, you know, whatever it is, and you'll survive it, you know, despite the Big Five and then all those things. They are Hishbati Chaya Roman Oretz. That's all wonderful. And the Torah goes on to promise us security in the military campaigns and so forth and so on. Those are all wonderful things, but certainly you can't compare that to the schar of Olam Haba. Yofa Shachas, the Mishnah Avos says, Shal Koras Ruach Olam Haba Mikol Chai Olam Hazeh. There's no physical material gift that God could bestow upon me, upon you, upon any human being that would compare in any way to the schar of Olam Haba. Okay. So let's just review some of our questions. Number one, we were wondering why Rava advocates to study Torah even if you don't understand it. We were wondering why the Torah is so emphatic about Amelus B'Torah. We were wondering where do we find in this pasuk any sort of allusion, a remez to Amelus B'Torah. All it says is Chukosai Telechu. And finally, we were asking, where is the promise of the reward for this great endeavor called Amelus B'Torah? Yeah, we'll get rains coming down from the heavens, then the vegetation will grow. That's all fine and dandy. But what about the main schar? And that's the schar of Olam Haba. And here, Rabosai, at this point, we're going to introduce a breakthrough revolution that I'm hoping, as we get close to Shavuos, 2 weeks down the line, this should prepare us, this should change our whole attitude towards Talmud Torah. Because we think, in our minds, and maybe I shouldn't project it on you, but that's the way I was taught to believe, that the greatest Talmud Torah is that of the scholar, of the giant, of the genius who knows Kol HaTorah Kulo, who's the Posek, he's the Rav Eliyashiv, you know, he's Rav Shlomo Zalman, he's Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Soloveitchik, this is it. And what's in it for me? It's totally wrong. But we have to reinterpret the word chok. In bichu kosai, what does it mean, chok?
There's no reason for a chok.
That's correct. Chok is a law. But here I have to ask you, if this law or this statute is so significant, how significant is it? If the Torah is talking about chok, the Torah is talking about the statute. It's almost as if the Hei Ayidia puts the emphasis on chok. What is the chok? And the answer is, the chok is what we call the law of nature. God created the physical world in 6 days with Asara Ma'amoros. And there's got to be something in the physical material world that achieves the divine goal, sustains the world, and God decides, you know what, for this, it's worth it for the world to continue existing. That's chok. You know, we say in Modim every day, 3 times a day, V'al nisecha shebechol yom, al nisecha shebechol es. What are we referring to? Do you see miracles on a daily basis?
Well, you should.
What kind of a miracle, Harvey?
Nature.
Nature, exactly. Do you know what that's called in the Ramban's famous terminology? Do you remember the Ramban has two types of nisim, two categories of miracles? Excellent. Nes nigla and nes nistar. What's the difference between a nes nigla, which is revealed? Nigla means zekeli v'yamveu, I see the splitting of the yamsuf. And nes nistar. Nistar means it's hidden behind what? Behind the law. Which law? The law of nature, as Harvey says so beautifully. B'chol yom. Yes, there's nisim b'chol yom, b'chol eis. Every moment, every second, there's a nes going on. And that's the continuing existence of the world maintained by God. Those are the nisim nistarim. Those are the hidden miracles which are nature. And what keeps it going? And the answer is the study of Torah. How do I know that it's the study of Torah that keeps nature going and keeps the world in existence? It sounds very frum, doesn't it? Like Rabbi Berzon, did you roll out of Meir Shorim? Like, this is like really, you know, Williamsburg. This is, I know, I've heard it, and I've heard these shmuzim over and over again. But how do you know it? I know it from Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Yirmiyahu HaNavi tells me, and this is a very, very important pasuk. He says, in lo brisi chukos shamayim v'oretz lo samti. Im lo I'll read the pasuk inside. Im lo brisi yomam v'layla chukos shamayim v'oretz lo samti. It's in Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Chav Gimel, one of the most important psukim in Tanakh, in all the Torah. In fact, do you remember when the sixth day comes in the creation story? Does it say Yom Shishi or Yom Hashishi?
Hashishi.
Yeah, and what's the significance of Hashishi?
That's what the whole
purpose of the creation is. And which Hashishi is that alluding to? The sixth of Sivan, the day in which the Torah was given. All of creation and the divine purpose is in order to achieve the study of Torah. The study of Torah keeps the world going. Now let me give you a little bit of a mashal here. Supposing you buy a washing machine. So in Israel and in any country, when you buy a washing machine, what they give you together with the machine, the delivery services, they give you what's called hora'ot shimush. What would you call it in English?
Yes.
Instructions. Right? They give you the booklet. And the booklet tells you the following. Look, the manufacturer created this washing machine, but you have to follow the instructions. You know, if you're meant to press hot water and you press cold water, you'll get cold water instead of hot water. But it gets even worse than that. It gets more complicated because sometimes if you press the rinse button, when you really want to press the hot water button, it can mess up the machine. Now, that's not a punishment. You know, if you have to call the technician, I mean, that is a punishment for sure. But it's not because you did something to the machine. It's not like you kicked the machine in the behind and therefore you deserve to be punished for that. No. It means you didn't follow the instructions. In the Nimshal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a universe and it's got its own legal, its own law system, its own statutes, its own, this is called Chukei HaTeva, the laws of nature. And if you don't play by the rules, it's going to mess up the entire system. This has nothing to do with punishment. And the way the system is built, in order to be Makayim, the world, you need what's called a chok. There's the chok of nature, and then there's another word, chok. And it's all the same word in Lashon Kodesh. It's so beautiful that a word in Lashon Kodesh could have so many deep meanings. We spoke about chok meaning nature, but there's another meaning in chok. As I said before, I'm standing at this traffic light and no one's around. Can I violate the law? Aren't I different? I'm above the law, am I not?
I bought the road.
I'm Shlomo HaMelech. I know that I'm the wisest person. I can marry as many women as I want to and it's not going to affect me. Can I place myself above the law? And the answer is what? A big fat no. And why? Because chok means shovel chol adam. I don't know if you ever learned the sugya of what's called ochel nefesh on yontif, you know, cooking and baking for yontif. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
One of the most fundamental differences between Shabbos and yontif, of course, is what we call
ochel
nefesh. But the Gemara says in many places, especially in Masechta Beitzah, that ochel nefesh has to be shavah l'chol nefesh. Has to be something that anyone would appreciate. So burning incense on Yontif is a problem because maybe you enjoy burning incense. I don't. Maybe you enjoy smoking a cigarette. I don't appreciate it at all. In fact, I find it very repulsive and very offensive.
You can smoke a cigarette.
I don't think so. If you ask me, Michael, I would tell you it's us. Again, if you do it, you have your rabbis to rely on. Who am I? Who am I to argue with the rabbis in England? I don't know. I don't think it's mutter. It could be that at one point in time it was mutter because they understood smoking in a certain way. The Pnei Yeshua thinks that smoking is good for your digestive system.
And they didn't know all those years ago how bad it was.
That's right. So maybe then it was considered shavah l'chol nefesh. But today, with the information that we have, the scientific evidence, we know exactly what the smoke does to your lungs.
That means you can't smoke bichlal.
Right, but on Yontif would be an Iser of Yontif. Why would it be an Iser of Yontif? Because it's not Shavah L'chol Nefesh. You can't tell me something that's antithetical to your well-being and your health is Shavah L'chol Nefesh. That's a Tarti de Sasri. So again, I'm not here to, you know, Michael, you have your rabbis, and, you know, next time I go to England, I don't know what to do. I think I make a big stink over there and in protest, because no one's going to pay the least bit of attention to me. But
I think I understand the whole concept. What are you saying, that the world only operates because people are studying Torah? Is that?
It's the study of Torah that keeps the world going.
Right. So my question is, how was the world kept going before Sinai?
In other words, God anticipated that throughout the history of man, there would be the study of Torah, whether it be early in history. Again, it's not clear exactly how much Adam HaRishon studied, if he knew all the seven mitzvahs, Pnei Noach, Shem V'Ever, and throughout the history. That's why you should know in the Yeshiva of Al-Lajin, the minhag was, this is 2.5 centuries ago, that there was always someone learning in the Beis Medrash, even in the middle of the night. And not because they wanted to drive these young men crazy by having to stay up through the night, the rotation system, but because they felt that there's got to be some Torah that keeps the world going. And my question to you is that if we accept this fundamental principle as formulated by Yirmiyahu HaNavi in Lo Brisi, Bris means Torah, Brishal Torah, Yomam Valayla, Is Chuko Shamayim Varetz Lo Samti, the whole Chok, the law of nature of Shamayim and Aretz Lo Samti, it will be completely undermined, then what aspect of Torah are we talking about? Which Torah keeps up the world? And I answer you with two possibilities, and I would like to emphasize one of the two as the correct answer. Torah study, as we indicated earlier, is broken down into two different dimensions. This Torah study in which I profoundly understand and I plummet the depths. I'm able to paskin shailus, the Talmud Chacham is he who can answer any question that you ask him anywhere. And there's another dimension to Torah study. What's that called? Amelus b'Torah. Amelus b'Torah means just working hard. How much you understand, I don't know. Imagine Rabosai, two Jews. Okay? We'll call one Reuven and one Shimon. Reuven wakes up in the morning at 8 o'clock, you know, he rolls out of bed, you know, he gets to Minyan at 8:30, comes home at 9:30, has a nice Baruch Hashem 7-course breakfast, goes out to Kola learning, and he's a genius, and he passes all his exams with flying colors. Shimon is a simple Jew, and again, I hate to use that word simple Jew because it doesn't exist. He's a Pasha the Yid. He is a tailor. He is a shoemaker. But you know what? He works hard to finance, to support his family. He wakes up at 6 in the morning because he has a shiur with his rav in the shul. And he learns for 1 hour. He comes back from a day's work and he goes to a shiur or he has a chavrusa. He's half asleep. I don't know how much he understands his limited background and so forth and so on. My father used to tell me that in his shtetl, where he was born back in Litha, which was called Plisa near Vilna, very often if you came in the middle of the day past a shop, there would be a sign out in front of the shop, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. And that was Rashi Tevis for Ich bin gegangen davnen. I went to daven. You know? The whole shtetl was built around Torah and learning and davening and going to the Beis HaKnesses. So I ask you the following question. I want to ask you two questions. The first one is obvious. You don't even have to think twice about it. Whose Torah is on a higher level? Reuven, the giant of the generation, who understands the Torah in its depth, or Shimon, never, you know, he does the best he can, but he really doesn't really sink in. Obviously, Reuven's Torah is great, right? But let me ask you a different question. Which Torah keeps the world going? Which Torah is chok? Which Torah keeps nature going? Which Torah is chok in the sense, as we use the terminology borrowed from Yontif, shovel echol nefesh? The answer is the Torah of someone who's a melus b'Torah. He puts himself out and he works hard. And he squeezes out a couple of minutes here and a couple of minutes there. And he takes a break. And with Mesiris Nefesh, he dedicates whatever limited amount of koichas of energies he has to the study of Torah. I don't care if Reuven is the Gadol Hador. Shimon is keeping the world going. Why? Because Shimon's Torah is the Torah of Chok. The Torah of Chok is the Torah that keeps the world going. And that's what the Torah wants to tell us here. Im bichukosai teilechu. What is the chok that we're talking about? It's a melus b'Torah. I don't care how much ideas a Torah has. And now we can understand why is it that when the Torah wants to induce our commitment and our gishmak, you know, dedication to our melus b'Torah, the Torah tells me, you know what's going to happen? The rains are going to fall down from the heavens and the land is going to produce its vegetation. What about the schar of Olam Haba? The answer is, my friends, the schar in Olam Haba is not something that the Torah is going to talk about. The Torah can't talk to us human beings about schar. It's like describing color to a blind man. The schar of Olam Haba is so incredibly qualitatively different than anything we know of. Anything that we can encounter and experience in this life, the Torah can't even spell it out. But you know what the Torah could tell you? The Torah could tell you, im lo brisi yom v'layla, if not for the fact that the Jewish people are dedicating themselves day in and day out to the study of Torah. They come to the Emek Learning Center, even though they could be flying to Manchester or wherever to make some more money and a couple extra pounds. And the pound is doing well, last I heard. I don't know, since then, I don't know. No, it's going down already? Okay. The American dollar started going up, at least lumat the shekel. But again, you know, tomorrow it could be the exact opposite. So that's the schar of imbuchu kosai telechu. And that's why Rava advocates that a person should dedicate himself to the study of Torah, even though what? He doesn't understand. Even though he doesn't remember what he learned. His schar is the schar of a melus b'Torah. And that's supreme, and that's critical. That's what keeps the world going. And if this be the case, Rabosai, I can begin to understand that when the Torah here at the beginning of B'chukosai is telling me about the great bracha that the world will produce, because the world, like the washing machine, if you treat it well and you follow the instructions, that it functions, so too the universe will follow the matkon, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe with all its laws of nature, if we are dedicated to what? Not Yediyas HaTorah, but Amelus B'Torah. And this is so critical. I spoke yesterday, just yesterday, it's not even 24 hours ago, to the Bar Mitzvah boy. And I told him that God has granted you, bestowed upon you, tremendous kishronos. Probably from your maternal grandmother, not from your paternal grandfather, but, and I have no doubt that you will succeed in learning. But don't sit back on your laurels. Don't think, well, you know, in my cheder, I'm the best in the class. I know I'm great. My father, no, I'm Amelus B'Torah. It's not coincidental that your bar mitzvah overlaps coincides with Parshas Bechukos, the first three words of the Parsha are telling you a very important lesson about chok that keeps the world going. It's the chok that shovel l'chol nefesh. It's the capacity that you have to put in the extra time. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Chagiga that there were two Talmidim in the Beis Medrash. One Talmud reviewed his lesson 100 times. And the Gemara says, he's not called an Oved Hashem. He's not the true servant of Hashem. The second Talmud reviewed his lesson 101 times. Do for that extra one time? The Gemara says he's an Oved Hashem. He's the epitome and the paradigm of a servant of Hashem. But apparently the curriculum in those days, as strange as it sounds to Arius, was to review the lesson 100 times. So the first student did exactly what according to the discipline that he was commanded. The second Talmud said, you know what? I want to go above and beyond. I'm going to put in that extra effort. I'm going to push myself a little bit further because I love the Torah. I crave the Torah. And if you look on your page here, I wanted to show you one thing that's very important to you. On page 156, and it's the paragraph that starts with the word Od. And he quotes the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Beis HaBechira. And the Rambam tells us, Mitzvah Saseh Lasos Bayis Lashem, we have to build a house for Hashem. Muchan, it's an unbelievable, Muchan Lias Makriva and Bo Karbanos. And then if you fast forward to Halach Yud Beis, after Rambam has established how important, how critical, how central is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. He says, "Va'oskim v'binyan me'alos hashachar v'atzei sakochovim v'akol chayovim livnos." Everybody has to get involved. Anoshim v'noshim, everybody, except for who? V'mevatlin tinoko shel beis rabban. It doesn't say that the greatest scholars of the generation are excluded. The big masminim, upon whom we rely for their Torah. No, the emphasis here is on the exclusion and the exemption of the Tinokos shel Beis Rabban. Why? Because they are a Melim B'Torah. They may not understand their Torah. From the level of Yediyas HaTorah, maybe their Torah is inferior to that of the giant of the generation. But nevertheless, through their Torah and their Amelus, they are keeping the world going. That's why it says, V'nasati Gishmechem Be'itom. Without them, the world could, Chas V'Sholem, be like that washing machine that breaks down. And if you fast forward now to page 158, he says the following. HaMedrash Omer, right here in Parshas Bechukosai, there's a Medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni, and the Medrash says, Lu ami shomea li Yisrael bedrachai yalechu, kemat oyveihem achnia v'al tzoreihem oshiv yodai. Melamed, Shakodesh Baruch Hu misaveh. Now ask yourself the following question. We don't understand the divine being. He's beyond our comprehension. But if you'd ask me, Misaveh, you know, that God has some sort of craving. What's he craving for? Certainly he's craving for the Torah study of the greats of the generation, for the Rugachevers and the Rameir Simchas and so forth, the Sariat Torah. No! Misaveh Shu Yisrael Amelim B'Torah. What the Yalkut wants to say is what God desires more than anything is that Amelus Petorah. And that's why the Pasuk opens by saying, Lu Ami Shomeli. Ami means my nation. My nation includes everyone, the woodcutters and every single person. What we need so desperately is Amelus Petorah. And if I say to you, Rabosai, as we come close to Chag HaShavuos, and we ask ourselves, what can we do, and how can we sort of re-energize ourselves, or change perhaps our focus, as we prepare for Talmud Torah, for the Torah study of Shavuos and beyond? I think this is a very important lesson. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Megillah that the calendar was organized such that Parshas Bechukosai would always be read before Chag HaShavuos. Even in Chutz Laaretz, where they're still lagging behind by a week, they'll still chaperayin b'chukosai before Shavuos. We'll have an extra parasha there by Midbar, And maybe next week we can discuss that parsha, why it's connected to Chag HaShavuos. But certainly B'chukosai. And the answer is because of the first three words in this parsha. The amazing significance of HaMelus B'Torah, of putting in that work, that effort, pushing ourselves, the extra energy. You're half asleep, but you drag yourself out. You waited 45 minutes to finally get that whatever. It was a cousin, as they call him here, you know, the Ben Do, to finally come around and get you out of there, you know, to return a rented car. You know? But we have to do it. That's what we got to do. And we find, but that's, you know what? Even if you come to the Beis Medrash and you're half asleep and you're tired and you have mechushim, you know what mechushim are? Mechushim are those little pings and pongs that bother you. You know that you're not really sick. You wouldn't go to a physician for it. You know, you've got allergies, or you have clogged ears, or maybe your shoulders are bothering you, or maybe you can't tread your feet, and yet you push yourself. That is the essence of Amelus B'Torah. Yiratzon Mipi, His will. We should all dedicate ourselves to Amelus B'Torah, to Yedias HaTorah, and in that way we'll be Mekayim the Olam, like the Hevel Piyam Shel Tashbar. We'll bring about the day in which, in Yirtzeh Hashem, all the great blessings of peace and security will come to fruition, because Hashem received such Nachas Ruach from our Amelus B'Torah. Can you at some
desire?
Thanks.
How was the public really?